This is All Mountain Media. Something Cryptid This Way Comes is a production of Old Mountain Media. The expressed opinions of guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Pacific Northwest Sasquatch Shadows, Old Mountain Media, or Something Cryptid This Way Comes.
Pacific Northwest Sasquatch Shadows presents Something Cryptid This Way Comes.
This is Josh from Pacific Northwest Bigfoot Maps, and you're listening to Something Cryptid This Way Comes.
Welcome to a special episode of Something Cryptid This Way Comes, The Interviews. I'm thrilled to welcome Josh Moss to the show. He is a GIS mapping professional from the state of Oregon and has worked to plot accurate details of claimed Bigfoot sightings. Today we will talk about various mapping projects, how data can drive research, and the importance of understanding as much as we can about the wilderness while maintaining the mystery and unknown elements of nature. There are links in the episode notes to some of his work, and I highly suggest subscribing to his Instagram at @PNWBigfootMaps. To watch this show in its entirety or listen to the extended episode, consider joining our Patreon. You'll get access to so many goodies. It's definitely worth the price of one cup of coffee. Well, cheaper if you actually think about it. Visit our Patreon today at patreon.com/PNWSasquatchShadows. Lots of merchandise is available for our members. Don't miss out. And now, Josh Moss from Pacific Northwest Bigfoot Maps. Welcome, everyone. I'm so glad you could join us. Today we have Josh from Pacific Northwest Bigfoot Maps, and he's put together an incredible tool for anyone curious about the location of encounters, including A, B, and C class encounters. And Josh, I know how much time this takes, and I love that you do it, and it's really appreciated. If you don't mind, I'd like to throw out the first couple questions, and then feel free to add to them or whatever you want to do. If you're cool with that, does that sound all right?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Excellent. Thanks again for being here, Josh. So,
thanks for having me.
Yeah. Tell us where you're at, first of all.
I'm located in Portland, Oregon, which, you know, is a city, but it's in the middle of great Bigfoot territory.
Yeah, that's right. Portland. So in case anyone's listening and doesn't, well, everyone knows where Portland is. It's all over the news right now, too, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Right south of me. I'm about 2 hour drive north of you. So Portland, Mount Hood, the shadow of Mount Hood.
Yes.
Which if anyone's aware, if you drive up to this really cool looking hotel, and if you were like me and The Shining is one of your favorite movies, it's actually where they filmed the outside of the Outlook or the Overlook. Sorry. The Overlook Hotel. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The exterior.
The exterior. Yeah. Not the interior. The interior was some Sun Valley place, I think, or Colorado.
I think so. Yeah. Something in Colorado or Utah.
Yeah. Yeah. So cool. One of my favorite movies. Of course, I saw it as a 14-year-old, scared the hell out of me, but you know, it was good because I won't stay in a room called 237 ever, but you know, that's cool. So Portland, so tell a little bit about the kind of the environment, what it's like in Portland when it comes to Sasquatch and Bigfoot and the paranormal.
Well, you know, you probably wouldn't hunt for Bigfoot in Portland proper.
Right.
Although looking at my sightings database, people have seen Bigfoot within the city limits more than you would think, you know, especially in some of the bigger forested parks. Mostly, you know, Bigfoot's not really an urban creature. So if right. I'm to go sort of researching, I would go to Mount Hood area, or my favorite area, which is almost equally as close to Portland, is the Mount St. Helens area.
Oh, yeah.
Just across the Columbia there. That's like the Gifford Pinchot National Forest is one of my favorite places to get outdoors and, you know, go backpacking, camping, driving, day hiking.
Yeah.
Whatever absolutely. It might be, you know, it's just very accessible and really cool. And so that happens to be my favorite.
Yeah. And that's halfway between you and I think. All right. So let's jump in here. I've got some questions I want to ask you. First of all, what caused you to be interested in GPS and mapping Sasquatch sightings?
Well, I'm a GIS analyst. That's my job. And so I've always been interested in maps and like environmental and science and archaeology. I was an archaeologist, and then I sort of made kind of a lateral career move into GIS, still kind of working for the same type of companies in the same industry, basically sort of the commercial side of archaeology and environmental sciences. And it's always been, you know, it's both a career and something I'm genuinely interested in, just maps and, you know, the environment and, sort of human culture throughout the ages and the way all those things come together. Mm-hmm. And Bigfoot is something I've been interested in ever since I was a kid. Just like almost everyone you talk to, you know, I learned about Bigfoot the same way, from the classic TV shows In Search Of, watching reruns when I was a kid. And I loved every episode, but a lot of it, you know, I kind of, as time went on, I came to disregard or just think of as, you know, blatantly false or unbelievable. But Bigfoot always hangs on the edge of reality to me. You know, there's so many witness accounts with people who seem so sincere. And there are these, in my opinion, it's very few and far between, but there are these pieces of evidence that are like really hard to discount. Mm-hmm. And that kind of keeps me interested in the idea of Bigfoot, is that, you know, it just nags at you. Like, of all the different paranormal encrypted things, it's like, it feels like maybe it could be true. So that kind of keeps me interested in it. And I was just, you know, kind of doing my job. And I thought, I wonder if there's data out there that I could pull into this software and like, just look at, you know, like maybe when I'm taking like a 5-minute break, like my brain's fried, I just want to not do my, you know, like everybody does at work, you know, you just want to take a little mental health break and look at something else. So I've got the Bigfoot report data now. What can I compare it to? What other environmental data can I compare it to? Or how can I use it in the ways that a biologist would use data about a known animal in order to try to learn more things about that animal through GIS? So basically, kind of inspired by what I know about the way that biologists and cultural anthropologists and archaeologists use GIS, I've tried to apply some of those philosophies, if you will, to this Bigfoot data that I was able to find.
Yeah. Have you found like parallels between migration? I mean, we're obviously going to look at some pictures. We'll talk about this a lot, but just off the top of your head, is there any kind of pattern, seasonal pattern or migration that you've noticed?
Well, you know, I did do the one set of maps for trying to kind of suss out a migration pattern in Western Washington.
Okay, good. I've got those. I'll pull those up in just a second. Awesome. And
just to quickly answer your question, if I was to say I saw a pattern, it was that higher elevation sightings were more prominent in summer, okay. which I think makes sense because higher elevation areas, like for instance, up on the slopes of Mount St. Helens or Mount Rainier, are like more accessible weather-wise during the summer, and they'll have more food sources like blooming if it's plants, or, you know, living there if it's animals during the summer months. So I thought that was, if there was an interesting pattern I got from that attempted analysis, that was it. It was like, it kind of makes sense that higher elevations would be used more for by any species during the summer months. And the Bigfoot reports seem to hue to that pattern.
What's the most interesting thing you found as a GIS mapper of Bigfoot? The most bizarre, how about this? The most bizarre thing you weren't expecting to find that kind of just popped out at you.
Well, the most unexpected thing to me is, like, you look at the overall sightings and so, or reports. I prefer to call them reports than sightings because not all of them are technically sightings. Like, some of them are just auditory reports or sure. whatever. And I have about 8,500 reports in this database from 14 different organizations, you know, BFRO type organizations.
Okay.
And they span from like northern British Columbia, you know, down to Florida. So basically North America. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to me is the most, the thing that I think would surprise people that aren't engaged with Bigfoot is like where these are. You know, generally, if you look at it at a broad glance, they're like kind of where you'd expect. They're in national forests and, you know, mountainous areas. And most of them, you know, if you did it just a raw count, like most of them are in the Pacific Northwest, Northern California. But if you look closely, like I mentioned earlier, you know, there's several, you know, if not up to 20, like in the Portland city limits.
That's so wild.
Or
that is so wild. There,
I remember when I did a map of North Carolina, I was surprised that there were like a lot on the coastal plain of North Carolina, which I did not expect. And so the thing that has shocked me the most is that when you look at the reports closely is the variety of places that they are. Someone who's not engaged with Bigfoot would be really surprised at all the different places people, at the very least, that people think they see them.
Okay. Well, let's let me just pop this open here so you can see it. And then people that are watching on YouTube or wherever this is going to show, they can see it as well. And it just in case you are listening to this on the podcast, go ahead and jump on to Pacific Northwest Sasquatch Shadows, the YouTube. You'll be able to see these maps also on the website, ommstories.com. But for now, Josh and I are just going to kind of describe it for you if you're listening on the podcast. So let's look at, we were talking about migration. So I have these up by spring, summer, fall, winter. I started with a spring one. So tell me about what we're looking at right here.
So what we have here is just, I took all the Bigfoot reports in Western Washington and I broke them up by season. Although, as you can see, the red points, I didn't have the season for those. So I just left those ones on every map.
Okay.
And, you know, the red ones let you keep an idea of where concentrations are regardless of seasons. But, you know, basically, if you, I kind of made it like four identical maps except for the seasonal points so that you could kind of scroll through and sort of watch the points move.
Yeah, let's do that real quick. So here's spring. Here's summer. And I'll go back in a second. Here's fall. And here's winter.
And what I thought was interesting is like you see from spring to summer, you see the sightings get more numerous.
And yeah, there's spring and summer again. Yep.
And you see them get more numerous in these high elevation areas like the North Cascades. And especially right there around the toe slopes of Mount St. Helens.
Sure.
And in the Olympics.
Right, right. I'm going to highlight here. So this area, can you see that red dot floating around there?
That's Mount Rainier.
That's Mount Rainier. Right. So here's Mount St. Helens down below.
Yes.
Right, of course. Yeah. And then you have Mount Adams, and then we're down to Mount Hood right down here. Right. So, okay. So here's Mount St. Helens. So I'm noticing, and this is the Gifford Pinchot. I'm outlining right now, basically the southern part of Washington State. And you can see the Columbia River. I'm kind of moving my cursor along. That's the opening to Columbia from the Pacific Ocean down and good old Portland, which is where you're at. And then I'm up in the and up north of there. So if we look at this, as I look at that, I'm looking at, again, I'll go back to spring and summer. Talk to me about the significance in the Gifford Pinchot in particular near Mount St. Helens, what you see in there in that area.
This episode is sponsored by Pride Counseling. We live in a world of mystery, of unanswered questions, of constant bombardment from endless opinions, and mostly from questions within ourselves. I've taken advantage of online therapy and have seen the benefits as a professional, a father, a spouse, and a friend. And without the help from online counseling, I would most likely still be stuck in the ruts of uncertainty and bleakness. We all struggle with our own true nature at one point or another, or we know someone who has. Therapy can be the difference between happiness and overwhelming darkness. Pride Counseling is affordable, private online counseling for the LGBTQIA+ community. You can get access to licensed, trained, fully accredited counselors and therapists that are LGBTQIA+ friendly. These counselors and therapists have at least 3 years of experience, at least 2,000 hours of hands-on experience, and are qualified and certified by their state's professional board. All you need to do is go to pridecounseling.com/PNWpod. Fill out a questionnaire, get matched with the counselor who is perfect for you, and you can start counseling today. It's more affordable than in-person counseling. And if you can't afford counseling, there is financial aid available that you can apply for. You get unlimited 24/7 messaging with your counselor, meaning you're connected with a counselor the entire time via your phone or computer, and you can schedule live video, phone, or text sessions with your counselor as well. With Pride Counseling, you're not wasting time traveling, and if you don't vibe with the therapist you're matched with, you can switch. Best of all, you connect from the comfort of your home. Half the battle of getting into counseling is getting to the counselor, and Pride Counseling eliminates that hassle. Plus, a lot of people in the LGBTQIA+ community are not comfortable talking to a therapist in person, out of fear of discrimination, or perhaps they just don't have access to a therapist that specializes in what they're struggling with. With Pride Counseling, you can connect with an LGBTQIA+ counselor from anywhere. And as a special offer to Something Cryptid This Way Comes listeners, you can get 10% off your first month of professional therapy at pridecounseling.com/PNWpod. That's PNWPOD. Again, that link is pridecounseling.com/PNWpod. Thank you to Pride Counseling for sponsoring this podcast.
Talk to me about the significance in the Gifford Pinchot in particular near Mount St. Helens, what you see in there in that area.
My thinking is that, you know, I guess at one point recently, you know, a lot of Bigfoot researchers were talking about migration. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed, like, with some Bigfoot researchers I've been talking to or that you'll hear interviewed, that point of view has shifted a little bit from migration to more of what's known as like a seasonal round. So instead of like migration over vast distances, traveling seasonally in more of a regional area to sort of exploit different food categories, you know, based on the season. And these maps to me kind of make it look like, well, in summer, there's a lot more reports at these higher elevations where certain food sources would be more available during the summer months, like your berries, you know, even little various animals that Bigfoots might try to eat would be more active on those higher slopes during the summer months.
Let's go from summer to fall here. So we're in summer right now. You can see the white dots kind of spread all. And I do see more in the upper elevations on the Cascades. So now I'm going to go to fall, which seems a little more scattered out to me.
And, you know, say that this seasonal round for foraging is like a viable theory, you could think that they have to go, as fall sets in, perhaps they have to access a wider variety of environments in order to find food sources.
Do you think snowmelt has something to do with that, and levels of river and lakes that rise due to snowmelt, say like August, September, that area?
You know, I've got to be honest with you. I've never thought about.
I'm just curious.
Lakes and well, that's and one when, thing I haven't thought about.
When do we have our salmon runs here? Isn't that November?
It's summer and fall is the salmon runs.
Yeah, there's two of them. Okay.
And so I to kind of, if you don't mind, if I mention that salmon map, that's one of my favorite of my maps, because I thought there was a pretty strong correlation between active salmon streams and the Bigfoot reports in the active salmon seasons. It was 42% were within, I believe it was a quarter mile. Yeah. And I don't think that's unprecedented for any kind of, you know, larger
bear
animal. You know, I think the larger and more, I feel like I'm a little out of my depth talking about this. You know, I'm not a biologist, but
sure,
I do think it's generally true that the larger and more complex an animal, the larger range it has.
Okay.
And if it's like an omnivore, like a bear, it's going to be aware of the availability of different categories of food during different times of the year.
Sure. Sure. Well, these four maps seasonally are fantastic. And do you update them frequently, or do you feel like you need to, or are you basically, where are these sightings like year from year? Where are you getting this information?
Well, that's a really good question. And unfortunately, like my sighting database is static. Okay. I just downloaded it and I have not been adding sightings to it. I'm kind of not set up for that. This is an opportunity I could give a shout out, though, to a fellow Bigfoot GIS guy, for lack of a better term.
Sure.
Who's on Instagram as Bigfoot Mapping Project.
Mm-hmm.
And he has not only like a web portal where you can report a sighting and he'll add a point to his database.
That's right.
But he also has like an iPhone and Android app.
Yes, and it's only $1.99. I actually downloaded it the other day.
I haven't downloaded it myself yet, but I just think I always like to mention that, because it's like, I kind of just took this as like a cartography project, and he has taken a whole different angle with what you can do with this technology. So it's very cool what he's doing.
Do you two work together at all? Do you talk or compare notes?
We have talked. I have not like asked to, you know, look at his data, but he's done a few thematic maps, kind of like maps that I've done. And we have spoken, but it's kind of cool. I feel like we come at it from different, we're basically using different potentials of this technology.
That's awesome. I love that. Let's jump forward here. Here we go. I wanted to talk about this little area. Obviously, you know what this is. We're looking at Ape Canyon, where the Fred Beck story, 1924, Fred Beck and a couple of his fellow miners were out there looking for an area to mine. And within a week, they had 4 to 5 different encounters, which is crazy and wild. And his stories are so bizarre. And he had this whole take on the interdimensional plane of Bigfoot, which is really kind of interesting to think about. They exist on a different plane of vibration and will pop out. And that was his whole thing.
Yeah.
And there's direct quotes from him when he wrote the book, I Fought the Ape Man of Mount St. Helens. So tell me about this real quickly here.
I was very intrigued, and I was like, I wonder if just using the access I have to online property records, because I for my job, I will often look up these old, what are called government land office maps that were basically used as guide maps for settling the West. So they date back to the 1800s, and they're updated every so many years, maintained by the government or the BLM in some cases. And, you know, they're all online as images. So based on the slightly lower level research I could do just online, that's the vicinity of the cabin, as far as I could tell.
Okay. It looks, if as we're looking at the map, you can see it's there's a great elevation to the north of it, or I should say a great incline that looks like it's pretty steep. And this is, again, this is on the southeast side of Mount St. Helens, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. So near the Plains of Abraham, which you can see if you drive up to Mount St. Helens. If you go up to Johnston Ridge, you can kind of look to the left and look over the opening. You can see where the whole thing is, but it's not really accessible that easily unless you're a unless you're a hiker, you know, you're going out and backpacking. Yeah. So British Columbia, lots of stuff going on in British Columbia. I know Les Stroud went up to an area up here. I can't remember the name, Ketchikan, I think it was called. And there are just hundreds of sightings, and it's the North Shoshone tribe is up there, the Tlingit tribe is up there, and there's a lot of different stories. When you're mapping something that comes to, say, British Columbia, Washington, I should say anywhere, does that ever play into it? Do you look at possible records based on Native American or First Nations recollections or encounters?
Well, I have not done any map really relating to anything with indigenous folks at this point, you know. Mm-hmm. That's a good idea. I've had some suggestions as far as that. I like to try to be like super respectful though. So I don't want to depict anything with indigenous folks, like where I would be not depicting it properly or in the way they would want it depicted. So honestly, I, out of what I would consider to be respect, I've kind of shied away from that. You know, when I was an archaeologist, I worked with a lot of indigenous folks from tribes here in the Northwest, like the Umatilla, and a small group that's not actually a recognized tribe called the Wanapum. I did feel like I was on a friendly level, but you know, some of this stuff is sacred and it's like private. And
yeah,
so basically I've just shied away from that because of a sense of respect.
I have a few contacts in Native American cultures locally here. And one of them has been become an incredible friend of mine. Went camping with him and I've learned so much. It's not about finding out where they are. It's about knowing where they are so that you can respect their existence, you know, and not go in. This next one, let's go down to your home. Let's go look at Portland. Man, extreme density, and that is Portland, basically, isn't it?
Well, as you can see, it's just east of Portland. It's just basically Mount Hood.
Right. So here's Portland right here. And then you've got Mount Hood. And you've got that area spanning the river. You can see that.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
And that's one thing I always love. And if to go back to like the origins of being interested in Bigfoot, I remember an episode of In Search Of that showed a Bigfoot swimming.
Yeah.
And it scared me so badly. Like after I saw that, I would be out like in a canoe with my mom and dad or whatever. And I would just be like looking at the water, just thinking,
right,
when is a Bigfoot going to swim under this canoe?
Right. It's like the closing scene from Friday the 13th when Jason pops out and grabs her. She's sleeping in a canoe.
Yes, but a Bigfoot.
But it's a Bigfoot. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is wild. I've heard the same story and they called him Scar Chest or something. Apparently he had a big scar across his chest and he would swim back and forth. And so that, I think that's probably the same story. If you look right here, we're starting to get into the Yakima Valley where I'm circling. This is kind of north, south central Washington state. And apparently this individual, if you will, crosses the river swimming back and forth just to the east of Mount Hood. Now, again, these are just things I've heard. I think that's really interesting that what if they're swimming out there, you know, and why not? Why not? I suppose
there's a lot of stories about them swimming across the Columbia. If you've ever like been out on a boat on the Columbia, that's a pretty damn big river. I don't know that I could swim across it, but
that's where I learned to water ski. So yeah, it's cold, it's dark, it's creepy and awesome.
Yeah.
but it's kind of haunting. Doesn't matter where you are. If you're up in Washington state or if you're on the border, it's a haunting river. And now when you think about a Sasquatch swimming and these big lanky arms, doing the crawl stroke. It is very frightening. I don't know what would be more frightening, seeing a crawl stroke or seeing a doggy paddle and just seeing a head bob. I don't know. Now I'm going to have nightmares tonight. Awesome. Let's jump ahead here. I wanted to jump to Pierce County. Now, Pierce County, for anybody that knows, if you're looking at this map, it's within the, it's the south of the Puget Sound, which is the body of water that comes down from Pacific Ocean, and it goes straight down and kind of divides up Washington a little bit. So Pierce County, now Pierce County, Mount Rainier is in Pierce County, but it's fairly populated. It's one of the most populated counties in Washington state, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, it's, you know, I-5 corridor. I-5 Puyallup, right here. You've got the Fort Lewis Joint Base, Lewis McChord, which, you know, clearly has a large population, and you've got like all of or most of Tacoma.
Right. Right. Now, Fort Lewis and McChord Joint Base, there are so many sightings that have been reported.
That's true. I've heard, I mean, I clearly I don't have them in my database here, but I have heard like a lot about sightings on Lewis McChord.
That's interesting to me, where you have soldiers that are very careful, because if you're military, I would assume you have to be careful with what you're seeing out there. Not careful with what you're seeing, but how you report what you're seeing. I would assume you need to be careful.
Yeah. You know, I've noticed that's a tradition in Bigfoot sort of lore or like reporting, is that people tend to put a lot more stock in reports from soldiers or police officers or other folks who have kind of, I don't know if you would call it authority.
Credibility, I guess.
Yeah. Credibility, or like you mentioned, their job could be at risk potentially by, and a lot of times if you hear an interview with a cop or soldier about Bigfoot, they maintain their anonymity.
Or they're,
which
retired.
Is understandable.
Yeah. Or retired. Absolutely.
Oh yeah. Retired. Yeah.
Now this, I believe, is that salmon. Isn't that right?
Yes. Yes. This is the salmon map.
All right. So let's go back and talk about that here.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever felt like you're in a tunnel? The sides are closing in on you. You're unable to escape the overwhelming feelings of unhappiness, anger, worry, or fear. I have, many times. Over the years, I've tried to solve my own problems, lean on myself, and suppress the depression of my past and the anxiety of my future. But then I decided to do something about it. And while I'm still a work in progress, I know that without getting help, those invisible monsters would reach for any opportunity they can to consume me. They still do. But with online therapy, I'm conquering those monsters. And it feels good. Without a healthy mind, being truly happy and at peace is hard. The good news is, therapy works. But what is therapy exactly? Well, it's whatever you want it to be. Maybe you're not feeling motivated right now and would like some tools to help. Or maybe you're feeling insecure in relationships or at work. Maybe you're not dealing well with stress. Whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better. Because you deserve to be happy. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself, because you are your greatest asset. And here's a special offer for Something Cryptid This Way Comes listeners. You can get 10% off your first month of professional therapy at betterhelp.com/PNW. That's betterhelp.com/PNW. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this podcast.
I believe it's that salmon. Isn't that right?
Yes. Yes. This is the salmon map.
All right. So let's go back and talk about that here.
Okay. So as we were talking about, like, salmon runs are seasonal, and I looked it up, and they occur in the fall and summer. So as you can see on the title of the map there, it says Pierce County summer and fall Bigfoot sightings by proximity to confirm salmon streams. And this is one of my favorite maps, because I like to try to get a statistic out of some of these maps. And in this one, I thought the statistic was somewhat significant. So what you have here is 42%. And I remember this one because this is like one of my favorite maps, of the summer and fall reports are within 1 mile of an active salmon stream. And I mean, that's not a super high correlation, but it's like, it's high enough to make me think that there's a pattern there. Like, if Bigfoots are real and these are real reports of actual Bigfoots being observed, then it seems to indicate that they do like to avail themselves of salmon as a food source.
Yeah.
So, and I like that because that's like what I want to try to do with these maps a lot of the times is Bigfoot enthusiasts and Bigfoot researchers will they have a lot of theories, you know, that they say. And part of the goal of these maps is to like, I take one of those theories and try to prove it with the data I have access to. And in this case, if you take the theory, Bigfoot likes to eat salmon. In this case, I think the data does a decent job of backing that up. And I always like it when that happens.
Absolutely. You're data driven. Basically, that's what data is for, to support theory, right? And to prove or disprove a theory.
And I wouldn't say any of my maps could rise to the level of proving like any of these theories, but this one certainly lends credence to the idea.
Look at the density of reported sightings of Sasquatch, Bigfoot, and we are in the thick of it. You and I, we live in the thick of it in the world. You know, doesn't mean they're not everywhere. I mean, we could talk Florida later, but you know, there's so much there. Let's jump to, there you go. So this is kind of with the food crops as well. I found this one interesting too, because I was looking down in Yakima Valley, which is down where there's a lot of orchards. It's drier. It's kind of near what we call our Napa Valley of the North, you know, with lots of wineries. And there are some reports on wineries and in vineyards over here. You know, when you get open to Kennewick over on the right side of the screen in the Tri-Cities area, there have been, I don't see any markings there, but I've read a lot about
those. The thing is that I didn't do all the Washington report. So I cut out those eastern counties from this analysis.
Okay.
So that's why you're not seeing anything in Kennewick.
All right. Olympic. So let's go out to the Olympic National Park. This is one of my favorite places in the world. I've spent many time up on Hurricane Ridge, out in Forks, which if anybody's listening, I hate to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway, Josh. That's where Twilight takes place. So you got to look out for werewolves and vampires, right?
Oh, yeah.
So this is interesting, too. Now, you have timber harvest plots. I've always wondered how you feel or anybody might feel about harvesting, clear cutting, logging, and how does that affect Bigfoot and its migration and sightings?
Well, this map I thought was very interesting because you can see like the sightings are really dense in these harvest plots, way denser than within the national park.
Now, is that accessibility, you think, by humans, possibly?
I mean, yeah, that's one really like reasonable explanation, is just that people are always in these plots harvesting timber and thus have more of an opportunity to spot any Bigfoots that might be around.
You go into the Olympic National Forest and you have to hike to get in there. You really do. And it's tall, it's steep. I've done some hiking back in there, which is pretty fun.
If you notice, the plots are all within the Olympic National Forest, but not the Olympic National Park.
Right.
Okay. So this is something that Bigfoot, and I might bother some Bigfoot researchers when I say this, right? Bigfoot researchers are always like talking about how it's a cover up because it's going to ruin timber harvest and this and that. But like, I think there's a misconception about what kind of land timber gets harvested on. Because timber, by and large, does not get harvested on private land. Timber gets harvested on national forest land. National forests are in a huge part managed like tree farms. And so when, you know, Bigfoot researchers are comparing the whole Bigfoot thing to like that spotted owl thing and like, oh, you know, property rights and this and that, that's just logging company propaganda. No one's ever lost their property rights because of an animal. Like, that's just not going to happen. And resource extraction has almost never been slowed down because of an animal.
I want to keep looking at these because there's so many, but we're going to run out of time here. So real quickly, this is the one you kind of popped in here for me, I think. This is Elma. right in the center where you can listen to season two, episode, I think it's 6 and 7, take place in Elma and Aberdeen, which is one of which is right on the tip of Grays Harbor, which opens up to the Pacific Ocean. Tell me about this map here. I know you dropped this in for me, which I love.
I honestly just made this map to go along with your episode because you were nice enough to invite me on your podcast. So I figured I'd just make a map, you know, for you of the region that you were making a story episode about.
Absolutely. If you're looking at this, you can see the Star of Elma. That sounded like the Star of David. You can see Elma that's has a star on it, let's say. And then if you look at the area, this little town, this is just north or south right here. You can see down to the southwest of that. That is actually, I went out there. I found the spot where the sighting took place in 95, where the characters Jen and Judy, which of course they are, names are changed, but that's where they saw multiple sightings. Then up north is where the next characters were lost on a logging road and saw it run across the road. So it's literally that area right there around Highway 101. I have a couple questions I want to ask you.
Sounds good.
Four questions with Russ.
All right, so I'm a dork. All right, here we go. So I've got four questions for you. Josh, we've talked all about Sasquatch. We've talked all about Bigfoot and mapping, and it changed my perspective a lot, and I really appreciate that. So I'm going to ask you four questions that have nothing to do with Bigfoot because I want listeners and viewers to get to know you a little bit, and I think it's kind of fun. So question number one, what music conjures memories for you of your life and why?
Well, if you're watching the video, you can see the guitars and records behind me. Music is, to quote that one character in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, music is my life.
Oh, the beginning, the DJ, right?
It's one of the Cannibal Family.
That's right. Oh, that's right. That's
what's
right.
His name? He's got the metal head. Anyway,
Grandpa. I can't remember.
I digress, but I really love music, and a lot of music conjures memories of my life. But like the stuff that I listened to when I was a kid that I still listen to, mainly because it was like what my dad listened to, and I got into it, is like Bob Dylan and the Grateful Dead. Really those two. I mean, probably Bob Dylan's my favorite musical artist. Grateful Dead's my favorite band. And I listened to those when I was a kid. I listen to them now. I listen to the new stuff. I listen to every album. With the Dead, you know, I listen to all the live material.
Number two, what is your favorite horror movie, if you have one, and why?
Oh, well, that's a good question because I really, really love horror movies.
Excellent.
And unfortunately, I haven't watched any in a while. My wife and I have a fairly new baby daughter, but she's taken away my horror movie watching time. Yeah. But I might just have to be a little basic right now. And because I think it's one of the first horror movies to, and I hate to say this because I love all horror movies, but like one of the first horror movies to quote unquote elevate the genre and just to be a absolutely phenomenal all around piece of art is The Shining.
Oh, yeah.
Which we absolutely mentioned earlier. And then yes. I have to put in an honorable mention for another movie that some people might debate me as to whether it's horror, but I will die on the hill that it is, and that's Alien.
That is totally horror. Well, I'm with you 100%. Sci-fi horror.
Yeah,
definitely.
So I really love Alien. Okay. And I really love The Shining, but of course everybody really loves The Shining, right?
So both of those, I wouldn't say Alien has any kind of paranormal aspect to it, but it definitely has an unknown creature. Do you find yourself drawn to it because of that, or what draws you to that movie?
Well, it's just a really great movie, but
yeah. Geiger, I think, is the artist. Is that his name?
H.R. Geiger. Yeah.
H.R. Geiger. Yeah.
And, but yes, I love creature movies. So I do like that about it. But I mean, Alien is just like a fabulous movie from beginning to end. You know, there's no fat on that movie. Every scene is perfect.
That's exactly. I know. And William Hurt, isn't he the one, I think, that something crawls out of him? No.
No, it's Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah, that's who it was. Okay, yeah. Amazing, amazing movie. All right, third out of four question. In your spare time that's not related to mapping your GPS, what do you like to do?
Make music. So I like to play guitar, and I play, you know, all sorts of different instruments and do a lot of home recording and play music with other people, play in bands, stuff like that. Okay. That's my favorite hobby. I also really love backpacking and hiking.
Okay, I was going to ask, do you get out in the woods? You got all these maps here. Do you ever kind of go and try to find one of these areas?
Definitely. And I would mention, you know, I have put the database like on my phone, like so I can look at it on Google Earth. And so whenever I go hiking, I'm like, oh, are there any sightings or reports near here? And I'll check it out that way.
Do you have any moment of trepidation before you head out, knowing that there was a sighting in that area and you're about to go into the woods?
You know, I like that question. It's interesting because I used to kind of like be frightened a little bit in the woods. And I've spent a lot of time in the woods because of my job and just the amount of backpacking I've done. I thru hiked the Appalachian Trail. So I've just spent months in the woods. And I did always used to kind of have a fear. But it's interesting, the more I've engaged with the Bigfoot subject lately, the less afraid I've been.
Isn't that interesting?
It's almost like facing your fear. Do you know what I mean?
I do, except I'll still never hold a spider. But yes, I do understand that. Yeah, absolutely. If you could go back to any time in history, what would it be and why?
I like that question too. And you know what? I think that I would like to see the Americas prior to colonization, because there's so much that we've lost as a species. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to, I mean, some of it was obviously with nefarious intent, but a lot of it was just like, okay, there was disease and indigenous people didn't necessarily write things down in stone, or they kept records on fiber, or so obviously there's bad intent that comes along with colonialism, but I don't want to put it 100% on that. The complete loss of cultures, there's a lot of unintended consequences that caused it. But if I could, I would love to just witness one of these indigenous cultures of the North America in its fluorescence. What do you think they are?
I'm going to ask you some questions here. Can you tell me what you think Sasquatch Bigfoot is?
Well, you know, being a data-driven kind of person, I don't know that I can rightly answer that. Okay. I guess like what I can say is that they are a phenomenon that many people witness. You know, you can say that for sure. A large, hairy biped that many people witness. But I can't go farther than that. Just being honest, like, I don't know.
Have you had any kind of experience or anything that when you're out in the wilderness that makes you go, I wonder?
I have never had a weird experience in the wilderness, despite the amount of time I've spent. I've had weird feelings, but you know, absent any stimuli I can put my finger on, I have to chalk that up to psyching myself out.
Sure. Kind of getting in your own head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Last question for you. Do you ever think we should have hard proof and evidence? Not will we, should we? Should we have that?
That's an interesting question. I think that if it's a real species, then we should, because just like other charismatic species of animals that we take a lot of effort to protect, like panda bears and whales and stuff, knowing for sure would let us like kind of do that kind of stuff for Bigfoot. So I think that I would answer that in the affirmative, because it would help us be kind of stewards of them. Mm,
okay.
Hopefully. That's being very optimistic about people, I guess.
It's giving people a lot of credit.
Yes, it's giving people a lot of credit. But I do think that people deserve that credit in some senses when you look at what we've done with other animal species in some cases. Everything's connected and all boundaries that you see on a map are arbitrary.
Yeah, they're made by us.
Nothing is actually divided. Something that happens here has an effect on whatever happens over here. And that's a very important thing to understand, I think, if you want to go about being a good steward of the earth.
Josh, thanks so much for being here today. I truly, what a pleasure. And you have somebody you wanted to mention real quickly about something you're sporting on your head.
Oh, yeah. I would give a shout out to Forest Floor. She's a Bigfoot researcher out of, I believe, like upstate New York. And she makes some great like research products and, you know, has some really cool information on her website. So give her a follow on Instagram. She's just a pretty cool person, cool researcher in the Bigfoot field. So
do you have, if people want to learn more about you or they want to follow you or they want to learn more about GIS and what you do, where can they find you?
It's just at PNW Bigfoot Maps on Twitter or Instagram or both.
Good. I will drop those links in there for you. And if you're watching or if you're listening, don't forget to follow our Instagram, PNW Sasquatch Shadows, or you can also go on Facebook. There's a page there, Old Mountain Media. That's old with an E, Mountain Media. And don't forget to subscribe to Something Cryptid This Way Comes. Really bizarre, wild, immersive stories just to throw you in there. And if you've not had an encounter and you really want to have one, but you're a little scared to have one, drop into one of these stories and hopefully you'll feel like you had a mini encounter. That's kind of the goal, to give people a little bit of experience and scare the heck out of them or make them just at peace. Josh, thanks again. Thanks for being here and we'll talk again really soon. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much, Russ. I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you for listening to Something Cryptid This Way Comes, the interviews. You can view this episode online at PNW Sasquatch Shadows on YouTube, where you'll see Josh and I discuss his maps, the process, and many other unique aspects of his work. If you'd like to dive deeper into Josh's process, what he has accomplished, and learn more about his unique approach to tracking and mapping Bigfoot sightings, I encourage you to become a member of the Pacific Northwest Sasquatch Shadows Patreon. In the uncut episode, we discuss the paranormal aspect of the 33rd parallel and ley lines, discussions of Fred Beck and Albert Ostman from 1924, and how the effect of fire lines and perimeters have possibly shaped the migration patterns of these great shadows in the trees. Go to the link in the notes and check out patreon.com/PNW Sasquatch Shadows. That's one word, PNW Sasquatch Shadows. If you have a unique story to tell, would like to be featured, and even just want to be part of the team, send an email to russ@ommstories.com. Don't forget to subscribe to PNW Sasquatch Shadows on Instagram, visit the link in the bio for all the goods offered, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, PNW Sasquatch Shadows. See you next time.
Cryptid This Way Comes is a production of Old Mountain Media. Visit us on Instagram at PNW Sasquatch Shadows and Facebook at Old Mountain Media.
Something Cryptid. This Way Comes.